You're listening to the Cricket Podcast.
I think it was a disgraceful performance, and I think it should never be permitted to happen again.
That is very good.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cricket Podcast, where today we're going to be talking about the letdown of an IPL contest that was the Kolkata Knight Riders versus the Royal Challengers Bangalore. I'm Jack Hope. I'm joined by Dan Weston. How are you doing, Dan?
Yeah, I'm good, Jack. Well, I'd say that I'm good. I'm not wearing my RCB face mask for one reason, simply that it's wet due to the tears that I've cried after this RCB disaster class.
It was a disaster class, and also in the background we've got Dan's dog, who will occasionally chip in with
he's not in the same room as me, by the way.
Right, before we get going properly, a reminder that we are sponsored by Woodstock Crickets. You can see their logo at the bottom of the screen if you're watching on YouTube, or you can find them on the internet if you search for Woodstock Cricket. TCP25 for 25% off anything you want to buy from them. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at The Cricket Pod. And if you're watching on YouTube, hit like and subscribe. The road to 10k, we cleared the 8,000 subscriber barrier, so that's good. Well done, everyone who helped us out on yesterday's show to get the last 50 or 60 people that we needed to get through there. And it's onwards now, 9,000, then 10k. The road to 10k continues. The cricket match that we are talking about, well, I say it was a cricket match, it was more of a battering. It was like an assault, quite a violent put down. Of RCB by KKR. It started with RCB batting. Kohli, I think at the toss, said that he thought that this pitch was going to be pretty slow and it was going to get slower. So with them batting first, he probably felt pretty confident. Looking at the scorecard, though, it didn't go particularly well. Virat himself was pinned LBW by Prasith Krishna pretty early in the innings. He reviewed it, of course, because he's Virat Kohli, and why wouldn't he? But was out even after the review. Devdutt Padukal looked okay, 22 from 20. It's not hugely fluent, but it wasn't a hugely fluent innings from RCB, and you know, maybe a couple more people around like that, they could have set up an actual target. He went eventually, though, nicking off to Lockie Ferguson, trying to do like some kind of late cut over first slip. Yeah. Srikar Bharat, Glenn Maxwell, De Villiers, Sachin Baby, none of them covered themselves in glory. Particularly Sachin Baby, 7 from 17. That was a painful innings. That was a how did he get a contract type innings from Sachin Baby. Hasaranga lasted a ball. Kyle Jameson 4 from 12 before he was run out backing up. That was kind of it. RCB ended up with 92. In response, KKR rolled out a completely different wicket as they chased down the score of 92 in exactly 10 overs. Shubman Gill, 48 from 34, looked pretty good. Went big to try and get to 50 and was caught by Siraj running in from mid-off. And at the other end, IPL debutant, NBA owner. Do you own an NBA? Erner. He's got an NBA.
He owned an NBA team. What's he playing IPL for?
No, MBA, a master of business. Potential business consultant. He could be a colleague of Ross one day. Venkatesh Iyer, 41 from 27. Some nice reverse hitting, some good cuts, a few nice drives. A good debut, you'd have to say, from him. Took KKR home. Andre Russell, not out, didn't face a ball. The only reason, really, to watch KKR, Andre Russell with the bat, didn't happen. They were just so good everywhere else. Dan, where do you want to start with that? I mean, obviously, there's the whole RCB disaster class, as you called it.
Mm. That's just food for thought. That's what Nick Knight said. It's not a disaster class. It's food for thought.
So what will they be thinking?
Well, they'll be thinking about how their net run rate's taken an absolute battering, and it's now minus 0.7. And KKR, despite having only won 3 out of 5, are now positive at 0.1. So that's, I mean, KKR nailed their strategy, to be fair, in terms of just trying to get done as quickly as possible to get that net run rate up, because chances are that, you know, then if the likely positive scenario for them would be to get go for 7-7 to 4 wins, 2 defeats in the last 6 games with a positive run rate, that gives them a squeak. So getting a good run rate was mandatory for KKR, and they did that with minimal fuss.
Yeah, they absolutely did do that. If we talk about RCB's batting, because that wasn't very good. Was it Stricker Barrett's first game of the IPL? Maybe his second? I thought it was interesting to bring him in at 3. And we got asked this by someone on Twitter, why Glenn Maxwell and De Villiers were sort of 4 and 5 in this batting order. I think if you had a criticism of RCB this year, it probably would be how they've lined up with the bat. Because they've done this in a few games. They had Washington Sundar batting up the order earlier in the tournament, and that didn't look too convincing. I'm not saying it would have been a completely different game, but was he slightly overpromoted, did you think, up at 3?
As in the team or in
the three? Yeah. Well, answer both. I mean, who dropped out? Patterdar was their mainstay of the first half of the tournament.
It's interesting,
great,
actually, if we look at Patterdar, actually, inside Mushtaq Ali Trophy for Madhya Pradesh this year, Patterdar has got a higher strike rate than Venkatesh Iyer with a very, very similar amount of runs. So you would think that actually maybe he had a little bit more upside than KS Bharat and Sachin Baby. Also, like, the thing is, right, I think Woss has described this before, so I'll give him credit for it anyway. I think he said that IPL teams are like 15 guys. IPL squads are 15 guys plus 10 and just go on the bus. And that's why you have to make sure that you, like, the squad players you pick are like the best that you can possibly wish to find in terms of doing that extra level of due diligence on them. And if in doubt, just go for an intent machine, you know? Like, so it looks like Mohammad Azharuddin, for example, who hasn't really got a look in so far. That would have been for me a better, more upside pick than these guys. But Sachin Baby, let's have a look at him. He turns 33 in a couple of months' time and has a career IPL strike rate of 122. He has hit about 13% boundaries and has, I think I'm just doing some quick maths on top of my head, 13 balls per dismissal. I think at the age of 32, we can pretty much rule out the fact that there's a lot of upside there. So that's just a weird pick. I'd much rather just say, okay, well, let's just get some young intent machine in and work. You know, at least there's something there to work with, you know?
Yeah, I didn't realise that he was that bad. I mean, I was joking that it was kind of a why did he get a contract innings. Yeah. How did he get a contract set of stats there, to be honest? And I know before the tournament we actually talked about Azharuddin as somebody that we thought would play for RCB, because De Villiers is the obvious choice to take the gloves, but he doesn't particularly like it, and I don't think it's not really a fitness thing with him necessarily, but he does struggle in the heat keeping wicket and then batting or vice versa. So if you're going to have a specialist wicketkeeper, yeah, I mean, absolutely, pick the guy who might hit a few sixes at least. And, you know, you can put him in at 6 or 7 if you have to, and there's a chance that they'll pull something off. If we look through RCB's order, they've not, I wouldn't say propped up, that's probably too strong a word, but Maxwell and De Villiers have scored a lot of runs from this year. They both failed today. They got 10 between them. De Villiers obviously getting a golden duck. So Glenn Maxwell got 10. De Villiers got 0. Is it something they need to be concerned about, that they are a little bit reliant on those two, or not?
Well, I think that the salaries they pay Coley, Maxwell and De Villiers means that they're always going to be reliant on them, I should say. And when you spend like half your budget roughly on like 3 players, it's pretty clear the way your strategy is. And I think that's where you get a little bit hamstrung with the lack of local talent from there. And this is where, I've said this before, I'll say it again, Coley at 17 crore represents no value. When he's captain, you think, well, that's clearly why. Now he's not captain. See ya. That's what I would be like, honestly. Or you negotiate it down. As much as you want to create a successful team, you cannot create a successful team by paying him 17 crore.
Yeah, it is a lot of money. I mean, opening the batting is probably a better place for him, but it's still. I mean, I think we said on the last show it's probably 10 crore more than you'd want to pay for him. He's still a good player, but 17 crore, you'd be expecting like peak Andre Russell to turn up for you every week. I mean, I don't know who do you think the best Indian player in the market is? Bumrah or Hardik Pandya, maybe?
Yeah, I think those two probably come on the most.
Jadeja, obviously.
Yeah, the guys who are obviously top level at a really rare skill set.
And what would you pay for? I don't know. Say Jadeja.
Well, Jadeja maybe less so, but certainly Bumrah. You would make a case for paying that Kohli kind of money for him. Hardik, obviously, now those fitness issues have kind of manifested themselves over the last sort of 12, 18 months. Maybe a little bit less, but peak Hardik, you would probably look at a similar amount. But you wouldn't pay it for an anchor batter. That's the thing. And yeah, people can turn around and say, well, there's commercial stuff, the knock-on positive stuff that you can come from that. And that's fine. You can say that. But that's still, you can't throw that commercial money back into your budget for your squad. And that's where the whole strategy falls down. And
but you can sell more whiskey. So
yeah, but that doesn't mean it's not like Man City where like you can have a rich owner and like throw the money back into the squad. It doesn't work like that. RCB, you can't sell more whiskey and then go, okay, well, now we've got another 100 crore we're going to spend at the auction. It doesn't work like that. So when you're spending like, I don't know how much it is, like a fifth or a sixth of your budget on one player who is basically an anchor, then don't expect good results.
So I've got a question about how the two teams approach the game, and this sort of comes from a comment that Saptagirish on Patreon has made, or Girish, as he's put in brackets, so obviously we'll start saying that. He's questioning Kohli opening the batting on pitches like this, basically, saying that you need momentum up front and you need to go and, well, strike the ball. I thought there was quite a juxtaposition today in terms of how the KKR batters attacked the ball, went down the pitch, and were generally quite aggressive versus how RCB played, which was sort of off the back foot looking for singles for a lot of the innings. I know they lost some early wickets, so you bat a little bit differently there. But do you think there's something to that?
There's a broad point we can talk about, I think, as well. On the Kohli opening debate, no dramas with that at all, because his numbers suggest that he lacks intent against spinners in the middle overs. You really, if you're going to play him, you have to open him. So I've got no argument with using him in that role. But it all boils down to the fact that you're spending a lot of money on a player who unfortunately does have boundary hitting deficiencies. Now, speaking of boundary hitting deficiencies, RCB hit 8 in the whole innings in what has actually worked out to be 114 balls, which is impressively bad. Now, KKR hit 15 boundaries and 60 balls, so they hit 25% boundaries. I mean, that so yeah, it says it all, doesn't it? RCB didn't even hit a single 6. KKR hit a couple. But this is the whole point I'm trying to make, right? And I've said this so many times, and I'll say it until teams stop doing it, okay? If you're struggling, if I don't know, what was RCB in the power play? They only had two down. Dev Dupadikar got out of the last ball of power play, 41 for 2, right? Bharat, 51 for 3. De Villiers, 52 for 4. Maxwell, 63 for 5. At some point in that, maybe at the De Villiers wicket, you have a choice. You knurl your way to I don't know, 120, and somehow you defend it. But you've probably got a sub 5% chance of defending that at 120, right? So your difference in win percentage, expected win percentage, if you get 92 all out, or 70 all out, or 120, is negligible. It is pointless. So you may as well just swing and swing and swing. And some percentage of the time you're going to get a roll for 70, some percentage of the time you're going to get a roll for 100, and some percentage of the time you're going to get 150 or 160, and then you actually might have a chance of defending it. That's the best strategy. But people go and don't do it because it goes against human nature of, it's kind of like, well, we lost wickets, so we've got to consolidate. That's I guess that's what every cricketer gets taught when they're a young age, right? No, don't do it.
To some extent, I think we saw that a little bit yesterday. I thought. I mean, they did nurdle it a little for a while, and Jadeja didn't score particularly fluently. But at a point, Gaikwad and Bravo did say, "Well, you know, we're on 110 here. We're on 110 here. We've got five overs left. We can get out, be bowled out for 120 and lose, or we can get 40 off the last three overs and put Mumbai under pressure and eventually it won. Eventually they did win by playing that way. I mean, I thought the whole RCB game plan was weird. We had another, Saptagirish, I'm sure, yeah. It's going to take a while for that to sink in. And Kumar, kind of a similar question here. And it boils down to why do RCB fans have to go through this every year? Why can't the fans have a normal team? Who curses team? And is there any way to exercise the curse? And what's the logic behind some of their sort of thought process in terms of picking players like Sachin Baby? A lot to unpack there, Dan. Some of it is, you know, in sport you occasionally get teams bit like this, don't they? And they get a curse, and the narrative develops around them, and there might be some like poor decision making at a higher level, and it sort of compounds itself. See Tottenham Hotspur in football. if you're a fan of one of the teams where you can very obviously, as somebody who's like an informed spectator, see that they're making irrational calls, yeah, or making irrational decisions, it is frustrating.
Soko for 30 million wasn't a good purchase.
what do they do? What do they do? What should they be doing? Because we praised them on the last show,
let's not go overboard with this, yeah, but because I do like the way that they recruited in the off season, and I'll say that. Obviously, we only saw one Andu Hasaranga play today. We didn't see Tim David, who probably would have fitted this. Who'd have been an immeasurable upgrade on Sachin Baby, I think that's fair to say. but okay, so here's the thing, right? I said this before in the show. I've said it about 100 times before. The reason why RCB will have these real like low points is so simple, right? You're spending 42.5 crore on three players, which is like half your budget. Then all it takes is for three guys to fail, which they will do some percent of the time, and you are screwed. There's no doubt about that, because you're compromising on so many different areas in your squad when you've got to find less than half your budget for like 20 players when you've spent the rest of it on three. And so that's what's always going to happen. Like, you know, you look at it, right? How many times does Maxwell play a match when he is? 20-25% of the time? De Villiers will be a bit higher. Kohli, well, he'll play an anchor kind of role, and we don't really know if that's good or bad most of the time. But anyway, you add all the cumulative percentages together, and actually, I don't know, 20% of the time, all three of them are going to fail. And then that's when you get days like this. Now the key from this is to not overreact to these kind of losses. And I sort of took the mickey a bit about saying, oh, it's just food for thought and rather than a disaster class. But I mean, I can tell you from personal experience, when we were in 100 this summer and we got rolled up at Old Trafford. I mean, that was so different, because that, I don't know if you saw that, Jack, but it was, the pitch was just...
Yeah, I watched it, yeah. Parkinson was like Shane Warne.
The pitch helped him be Shane Warne, but it was good, yeah. But there was a clear like mitigating factor as to why we got rolled for a low score that day. And actually, as it goes, like, probably if we put 20, 30 more on, it would have been a tough chase, because Manchester didn't really look that fluent in the chase either. And they lost like four wickets chasing 80 or so, something like that, yeah? And it wasn't like KKR today, who just went out and just blitzed it as if it was like the easiest thing in the world. You just have to, you've got to put that away in a box and just say, okay, well, it was easy. It's easy when you've got something to blame, like the pitch, which was obviously the case at Manchester. And we were just like, well, okay, well, not playing on a pitch like that ever again. RCB probably don't really have that today. So it'll be interesting to see how they bounce back from that. It's not going to be easy necessarily.
I mean, I think there is a quality core there, though. And I think a couple of players have stepped up. I think Siraj looks like a much better bowler this year, for example, than he has in previous IPLs. So I think, you know, between Siraj, Padakal, Coley, De Villiers, Maxwell, I don't love Jameson, I will be honest.
If we add that into the equation, they actually spent 57 crore on four players. So basically, I'm not sure Jameson's output so far is the equivalent of a 15 crore player. I'm not sure it's equivalent to 1.5.
I think crore. Someone just put in the chat Jameson lol, which kind of sums up the performance.
Maybe
I think.
That's the whiskey branding.
Yeah. Can we flip over and talk about some of the positives from a KKR point of view? Because we're pretty dismissive of them. We've talked about how they got their strategy right in terms of recovering that net run rate and giving themselves still a bit of a long shot here. We're probably talking 20% chance of playoffs or 25% chance of playoffs from this point of view. But it's you know, it might be up from 10% before the game. So they maybe doubled their chance of making the playoffs in one match here. I thought they were really good with the ball in terms of the lengths and that they bowled. So, you know, if you compare the two sets of spinners here, Chakravarti and Narine with Chahal and Hasaranga, I thought where Narine and Chakravarti bowled and the speed that they bowled at was super, super effective on this wicket. And you could actually see some of the RCB batters more or less just dangle their bat out there and hope for the best. So when we're critical of them for not going out and hitting the ball, I mean, sure, that's a way to maybe counter it. But when two bowlers are bowling that quickly and bowling a length really consistently and in a really controlled manner that is difficult to get out to, you do have to praise them. And you know, their figures, it's a combined 33 for 3. Chakravarti picks up the 3 for 13.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. I thought it was great, great control from the two KKR spinners there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely fantastic. Narine had maybe not the best 100, so that was it's good to see him. Looking at his numbers these days, you'd peg him in that defensive spinner bracket, and 0-24 again reiterates that. I think he had the highest dot ball percentage or one of the highest dot ball percentages in the CPL as well. So clearly a very defensive spinner and a good one at that.
Yeah, his CPL economy was like 4 or something like that, wasn't it?
Akil Hussain, both of them under 5.
We also saw Andre Russell pick up 3 wickets for 9 runs across his 3 overs. It was a good bowling performance. I don't know if it was quite that good. There was definitely some RCB mayhem involved in that. What was quite curious about the first innings, if you look at the bowlers, so it's 4-4-4-4-4-3. Which meant there's someone who was going to have to bowl the last over. Now, I know that you know, RCB are 9 wickets down, and I could have probably come on and bowled, and it wouldn't have been that bad. Would you venture a guess at who might have had to deliver that over, Dan?
Maybe Rana?
Yeah, it could have been Rana. Rana bowls for RCB, like off-spin tweakers. That could have been quite... I would have quite enjoyed, I think, Mohammed Siraj trying to take down Rana for 30 runs in the last over to give RCB a chance.
Would it be get Owen Morgan to play his arm over for an over?
That was funny. I don't think Morgan necessarily got the math. He might have got the math wrong. I don't know. I don't think he got the math wrong. I think he was just like, let's keep the pressure on.
Rana was a good matchup against Chahal, maybe.
we'll bowl him out. And then the other person, I mean, Shubman Gill batted well, but Venkatesh Iyer on his debut, convinced by his mother, apparently, to not pursue a career as a Deloitte consultant and instead become a cricketer. I think he owes his mum one here. Pretty good start to your IPL career.
Not too bad at all, is it? It's just to see where it goes from here. Because, I mean, looking at his numbers at lower levels, they're right. But no better than some of the RCB squad players. He's 26 years old now. What he has got is he looks like he's got quite a lot of stability. He's got high balls per dismissal count at Saad Mushtaq Ali level. And also has regularly stay numbers as well. So again, with that stability ethos in mind, KKR, I think they've had this kind of problem of losing a lot of wickets in the power play over the last year or two in IPL. So that may be their mindset towards that. Although I expect that he'll he'll look to be quite brave generally with this kind of new McCullum regime, if you like.
Well, we got the RSAT.
Yeah, he can actually bowl as well. He bowls a little bit medium pace as well, yeah.
Okay. We got asked a question about this, about the McCullum impact on Shubman Gill. I think McCullum was saying in the week or at some point that Gill has the highest timing rating according to Cricviz, but is wasting his talent a little bit because he doesn't score quickly enough or fluently enough. Do you think there's an element of truth to that? He was quite aggressive today. He was hitting the ball over the top, coming down the pitch. I know there was, you know, next to no pressure on him. In this scenario, but it looked good, I thought.
Okay, so let's get two things out of the way, one before the other. Timing rating, I couldn't care less about, because probably if a player's got high timing rating, it means they're probably not teeing off that much, which is, I think, probably has been the case for Gill over recent times. You know, when Andre Russell or Chris Gayle are not going to have a high timing rating because they're teeing off at everything, whereas like a Virat Kohli or whatever will probably have quite a high time rating because he just tries to knock it around. Now Gill is like, he's just, he hasn't been aggressive before. What we do see, McCullum wants him to have that game plan. He wants them to have the game plan. I like the way McCullum talks in terms of being brave, and the great quote, which was, if you can't change a man, change the man. I love that quote. It's so good. Whether he's the recruitment genius that's required for this overhaul needed at KKR is another matter entirely. But certainly, like the general ethos that he's talking about.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. There's a mega auction this year. There's a whole bunch of pretty mediocre Kiwis that will be licking their lips at the prospect of getting a gig there. I'd have thought. You know, Seifert, he'll be renewed. We've got Southie in. Who else? Mitchell McLenaghan, he's fallen out of the IPL. He'll probably want a gig, won't he?
I want Lockie back, can't I? He's good.
Yeah, Lockie is quite good. He did beam someone, which was not who you want to be beamed by. But yeah, I was just having a quick look in the chat, because I think that's more or less everything we've got to talk about for this match, Dan. I mean, I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to bring up. If anyone's got any questions, wing them in now, basically, is what I'm saying. Any extras from you?
No, I think we've covered that pretty well, haven't we? And this is...
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't an awful lot to cover. Rickon's asked a question about Jameson in T20s. Do you think someone will be paying a lot of money for him at the next mega auction? No. Or do you think, you know, he's got a particularly long career even for New Zealand in line?
Well, I mean, this is why it's so difficult, really, to go from... like kind of one format for New Zealand to playing Super Smash to go to the IPL. I mean, that's just a massive, massive, massive jump in kind of the quality of league. And if you look at Jameson in T20, he is ultimately a power play specialist. He bowls well over 50% of his overs in the power play overall in his T20 career. He barely bowls at the death, probably about 15% of his death overs, and it's not impressive either. 10.6 economy is not great. Now, and that's in domestic for New Zealand, it's actually almost 14s at the death. So there's a limited, unfortunately, I think there's a limited skill set there, because you're not going to pay 15 crore for a power play specialist who bats a little bit. I don't see the value there. I think he'll get sold, but I don't think he'll be anywhere near 15 crore.
Yeah, yeah. No, I would imagine somebody will want him maybe as a fifth choice overseas, to be honest. Or potentially, if everyone's playing at their home venues, there are teams that would like him as a power play specialist. If it's favourable, yeah.
But that's not the point.
He is a good test player. Right, I think that is more or less everything for this game. Do you want to quickly let us know what you think about tomorrow's match? Sorry, I've lost my note here. Which is Punjab Kings. I can't say it. I want to say Super Kings 11, but Punjab Kings versus Rajasthan Royals. It's both of these teams desperately need to win this match, don't they? I think.
Although it's like, you know, halfway point roughly into the season, I think this match comes in towards must-win territory for both teams, particularly for Punjab Kings, who are 3-5 at the moment. They can't really afford to go 3-6. Yeah. Royals, if they win, though, 4-4, and they put themselves in with a squeaky. In fact, Royals, if they win without, unless it's a really close match, they'll go above Mumbai tomorrow if they win. So that's a real positive for them. Now, the thing for me is that you obviously would kind of want to talk about who we think is going to win, but the problem is that I think so much depends on the team selection for both teams. I think both teams have got the potential to get it spectacularly right with their team selection. Both teams have got the potential to get spectacularly wrong as well. So let's see. If it's Royals with Evan Lewis and Liam Livingston and players like that, then we're looking forward to it. I think they're probably favourites.
Yeah, I mean that's going to be quite exciting just in and of itself. I think watching Liam Livingston. You'd think probably get a real go over the next 7 matches, and I for one really hope that he scores a couple of centuries or something like that. You know, completely builds upon what he did at the 100 and gets sold for about as much as Kohli at the next next IPL auction, because I do enjoy watching Liam Livingston bat. And I also think it's really funny that if you write something nice about him on Twitter, he likes it really, really quickly. And I'm not, that happened to me, and it's happened to a couple of other people who are sort of tweeting in the same space. I just think that's exceptional value that he's taken the time out of his day to search himself or set a notification for someone types Liam Livingston on Twitter. I mean, it could be, you know, he might be employing an agent to just go through and do this as like a professional hype man. I don't know, but it's quite funny that that's happening in the background. The other thing that might come out of this, and this we'll end on this because a few people did ask about it, and do the pitches potentially being a bit slow, potentially being a bit, well, quite spin friendly, do they make England's World Cup selection look a bit iffy at this point in time, Dan?
Well, I think it needed the pitches to make it look iffy. I think it was iffy to start with. And I said that at the time. I posted that on Twitter when they announced the squad. It was, where's the spinners?
Yeah.
You've got pitches which are going to be the World Cup, which are coming straight from after the used pitches, or not going to be particularly, wouldn't necessarily, they're going to be particularly belters. Probably could have done with Matt Parkinson, I would have thought.
Yeah, it's a little bit strange that they haven't picked him. It's very strange that they haven't picked him. But anyway, they haven't. That's the end of this show. Dan, do you want to remind people where they can find you?
Yeah, at SA Advantage on Twitter. And if you've got about an hour to spare, you can read my Substack, danweston.com.
Great. And I think we might be back tomorrow after that game. I can't remember. I do have the schedule written down, but not in front of me. But I think I'm about, so someone else probably will be. It should be pretty good fun. There's 136 people viewing right now, and other people will watch later. Make sure you hit like and subscribe. Let's get up to 8,100 by tomorrow. I think that might be asking a lot, to be honest, but you never know. You don't ask, you don't get.
YouTube algorithm.
Yeah, the YouTube algorithm just randomly write loads of good stuff. Tell your friends. That's probably actually better than the it's not better than the algorithm. The algorithms are very, very favourable for us. But tell your friends, because you know, organic word of mouth growth is good. Marketers have led me to believe. Cheers, Dad. Have a good one.
Cheers, Dad.